This is Mac for Math This Week. 30 minutes of news, reviews, Q&A, and features from the world of the Macintosh, iPod, and iPhone. Coming up, we track down counterfeit USB flash drives.
You're seeing a huge capacity, like a 200 gigabyte product at a very low price. If it seems too good to be true, then it probably is.
Fake flash drives are hitting the high street and the web. We've got a consumer alert worth listening to. Also ahead, finding the power.
Possibly the simplest and cheapest way of giving your Mac the most power possible is to fill up with as much RAM as you can get.
Rob Buckley tells you how to make your Mac bigger, better, and faster with just a few tweaks. All that in Q&A coming up on Mac for Math This Week. With the resources of Mac for Math magazine, this is Mac for Math This Week. I'm Brad Gibson reporting from Shanghai, China. Ni hao and welcome as we continue our look at China, technology, and Apple. We've all heard about the proliferation of pirated software and hardware. Everything from internet scams to the guy on the high street who walks up to you trying to sell a copy of Microsoft Office for real cheap. On this episode, we'll clue you in on a few scams that have their roots here in China, and we begin with fake USB flash drives. In the UK right now, people are selling bogus USB flash drives on eBay and Craigslist. At first glance, these drives look like an incredible deal on a high-capacity flash drive at a cheap price. Many of these flash drives are originating from here in China, and we found them everywhere. But before you buy one, we've got some important facts for you on one scam that is too good to be true. In a city of 19 million with thousands of skyscrapers, this 25-story building really doesn't stand out among the crowd. It's only when you enter do you notice the first three floors house over 100 different retail kiosks, all about 20 by 20 feet in size. Called the Fenshine Factories and Accessories Plaza, they sell everything from sunglasses to watches, memory sticks to ski gear, golf clubs, tennis rackets, belts, tennis shoes, Tiffany jewelry, iPods, iPhones, Mac software, you name it, and it's here, as well as four other similar locations in Shanghai. The only difference between this place and your neighborhood high street retailer or shopping mall is the fact that everything sold here is fake. And when you walk in, little prepares you for the onslaught of salespeople who are not shy in trying to get your attention.
Hi, sir. Watches. Watches.
Hello, sir. For some magicians.
Hi, sir. Here. Kids bag.
DVDs.
But it's not Gucci handbags or Rolex watches we're interested in today. It's USB flash drives we're looking for, and with little effort, we find them everywhere. The main two brands we found were Kingston and Sony. As you can see on our enhanced podcast, they clearly show the Sony logo in nice, professional-looking packaging. If we hadn't done our homework, we'd think that they were the real thing. But the fact is, they're not. Not even close. I approached one electronics kiosk and inquired about a large variety of Sony-branded MicroVault USB flash drives, ranging in size from 16 gigabytes to a whopping 640.
Your USB drives. I didn't know you could go up to 240 gigs on a USB. Are these really 240 gigs? You can test and show them to me. Okay. And how much is this 240 gig?
How many pieces do you want?
Let's say one. Let's just say one.
What's this price for you? Okay, best price, 240 pieces.
About 420 RMB. Okay.
420 renminbi is equal to 40 pounds or $61.
And the 500 gig?
500 gig?
Mm-hmm.
Best price.
Best price, 680.
That's 65 pounds or 99 U.S. dollars.
And these actually work?
Yes.
On Windows and Mac?
Everyone's okay.
Okay, any computer. All right,
yes.
All right. I'm just looking.
You tell me you want to buy how big a memory. You want a 240 gig or 500 gig?
Okay, 500.
500 gig, okay. If you really want that, give me a discount, okay.
About 550. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
As with any of the discount vendors in China, it's all about the art of negotiating as the price keeps going down. Now it's £53 or $80.
I'm just thinking about some prices. Thank you.
If you want, I'll give you $400.
$400. Yes. All right.
1 cent. How much? You could tell me your price.
Now we're down to £38 or $58.
$350. All right.
Yeah, what's your price?
No, I'll tell you what.
Your price.
No. I'm just looking right now, but I'll definitely come back. All right, thank you.
$200 you want.
$200. For which one?
$500.
For the $500. $200.
The price now plummets to £19 or $29. But it gets better as I start to walk away.
Look, have you got a card? Can I get your card?
You can buy it right now.
I'm just looking. I'm definitely interested. Definitely interested.
You can buy it right now. Okay, $150.
As I'm laughing, the price falls to £14 or $22.
Tell you what, let me think about it. I'll be right back.
How much?
Let me think about it. I'll be back. And I leave as she says 100.
Her final offer, £10 or $15. A stark difference from the £56 or $99 she started with. The reason she can ask so little for these flash drives is because they aren't what they advertise. They're fakes. In many cases, technically altered to appear on your desktop as the real thing. They're now appearing in retail stores, just like the one we visited in Shanghai. We've even seen reports online of them appearing at street vendors throughout Europe and the UK. But in the last year, the scam has moved to the internet. They've been showing up on eBay, Craigslist, and dozens of other sites, making it an irreversible crime for an unknowing consumer who is trusting someone they don't know. It's only after their money is long gone that they find they've been duped. Under the shroud of the web's anonymity, there's little the buyer can do to get back their money. Here's how it works. First, there are counterfeit flash drives that either have a small amount of flash memory physically inside, say 1 gigabyte, or in some cases, no memory at all. Once the drive is plugged in, many look at their Finder window and then they realize the bad news. But in many cases, the second type of flash drive scam is the cruelest. These drives have some memory, say 1 gig or less, but on screen it appears the drive is 64 gig, 120 gig, 240, 500, even 640 gigabytes in size. What these fraudsters have done is written software commands to the hardware of the drive, which shows non-existent sectors. Every time you copy your valuable files that are larger than the actual capacity of the flash RAM, the data is written into these virtual sectors. While it might look like your data has been saved successfully, in reality, it hasn't been copied at all. By then, for many, they have deleted the original files from their Mac's hard drive. They only find out hours, days, maybe even weeks later that their data is permanently gone and they've been duped. The spread of counterfeit flash drives is growing. Legitimate manufacturers are reporting a 2- and 3-fold increase in these fake flash drives, much of it online, where consumers are more trusting, but also more vulnerable. So how big is the problem of counterfeit USB flash drives like the ones we found in Shanghai? And what should you do to protect yourself? I recently spoke to Shane Higby, the director of Sony's consumer media division in the U.S., for his insight. I began by asking Shane where Sony is seeing counterfeit USB flash drives the most.
We see it mostly on internet sites like in eBay, for example, but we do not see it very much in the retail shopfront level. I think the U.S. market is different from the rest of the world in that there's more kind of established national accounts and regional accounts, which is our primary channel to go to market. So we do see it online. It's tough to quantify, of course. It's pretty clear that it's much worse of a problem in other parts of the world than it is in the U.S.
We're seeing counterfeit Sony USB micro drives in capacities as high as 500 gigabyte, which right now is impossible to make. So that people don't get caught up in these flash drive scams, tell us what size micro vaults Sony is making right now.
Right now, our top capacity is 16 gigabyte and below, so 8, 4, 2, and 1 gigabyte actually has been discontinued. So 16 is the max. 32 gigabyte is expected to hit the market in a few months, but 16 gigabyte is the biggest size on the market today.
I guess the big question I have for you is, what does the consumer need to know so he or she doesn't get caught up in these counterfeit scams?
I think there's two key ways. One is to buy from an authorized Sony reseller. But even our online partners, they'll note somewhere in their website that they are an authorized Sony reseller. So when you're buying from one of those resellers, you'll know that you're getting an authentic Sony product. That's the first way. The second way, to be kind of blunt, is to apply a certain level of common sense. And if you're seeing a huge capacity, like you mentioned earlier, like a 200 gigabyte product at a very low price, so if it seems too good to be true, then it probably is. There's also ways just by looking at the packaging where the Sony logo is written in a different font. We've even seen misspellings and things that really tip you off that this product could not be a true Sony product.
What is Sony doing exactly to stop these counterfeit products from being sold?
So to stop it, we actually have a team within Sony that takes each and every instance that we see and decides what the appropriate course of action is. And in some cases, if it seems to be a bigger operation or a more prolific supply of these drives that are infiltrating the U.S. market, they can take legal action. If it seems to be someone that's just reselling something they bought, then it's not worth shutting them down one by one. But Sony does have a devoted resource within our organization to address this problem, not just for the USB category, but for any other product categories that Sony manufactures.
Now, these fake drives are coming in two varieties, drives that are either missing the physical flash chips inside or have instructions written to the ROM that fool people on screen into thinking that they have, say, a 250 gigabyte capacity. Are you finding the same thing as well?
Yeah, it's pretty much like you described it. Obviously, there's not that much flash built into these things, so they'd never be able to sell them at the prices that they are. So it's a complete fraudulent offer. But there is ways that they can try to indicate when you plug it in from an operating system standpoint where it looks like it actually has the capacity. But the user would quickly find out as they try to load it with data that it was not the true capacity that was indicated on the packaging.
So, Shane, let's repeat this again. What can consumers do to protect themselves against this type of counterfeit fraud?
We looked at two things. One is assuring that you're buying from a Sony authorized reseller. So even some smaller online dealers, if they're an authorized Sony reseller, that will be stated somewhere on their website. And usually they'll state that pretty prominently because that is something that they're proud to be a part of. Secondly, we ask consumers just to use common sense. And if they see a price and a product that seems way too good to be true from Sony, to stay away from it. And of course, they can always go to our website. That's an easy way to find out what the authentic Sony products look like and what the true specifications are. So they can always look at that against what they're seeing maybe on eBay to find out if it's a true Sony product or not.
Shane Higby is the director of Sony's consumer media division in the U.S. There is lots of valuable information on fake flash drives online. The most informative site that we found was sosfakeflash.wordpress.com. And you can get to it right now through our enhanced podcast link. That address again is sosfakeflash.wordpress.com. Next week, as we continue our visit to China, we investigate the never-ending problem of software piracy. When you first bought your Mac, it was fast as a bullet, and you thought the hard drive could store just about anything. But over time, that spinning beach ball has started to show itself a lot more than before. Files open slower, your browser doesn't load pages as fast, your Mac is slowing down little by little as you add more files, applications, and music. But there are several things you can do to speed up your Mac and free up space that will cost very little or nothing. Contributing writer Rob Buckley has got some great suggestions and tweaks to make your Mac bigger, better, and faster. And he wrote a 10-page feature entitled Speed Up Your Mac, which appears in the June issue of Mac Format. He joins us now to share some of those great tips. Thanks again for joining us, Rob.
No problem, Brad.
For those Mac users out there listening right now who have a Mac between, say, 2 and 4 years old, your advice to them is before you buy a new Mac, try some things that might make it faster, right?
A 2-year-old Mac is perfectly fine. A PC, you might be thinking about upgrading after a year, but a Mac, 2-year-old Mac, that's perfectly fine. Once you're outside 4 years, yeah, then that's kind of the level you need to be thinking about. But 2 to 4 years, that's perfectly fine. There are plenty of things you can do to get your Mac just a little bit faster and squeeze some more speed out of it.
Right. Now, let's begin by addressing the issue of hard drive space, or should I say the lack of hard drive space. That plays an important role in your Mac's overall speed. So why is that?
There's lots of reasons. The system itself, OS X, does need a certain amount of hard drive space, and it uses that to switch out when it's running out of real memory. So it uses the hard drive. And if it doesn't have enough space, it can't fake the right kind of memory. So it ends up that your programs just don't work as well as they should do.
Right.
There's also things that your Mac uses the hard drive for that you don't necessarily know that it's using it for. Because things like Roxio's Toast, for things like IDV, IDVD, those kind of programs need to use temporary files, and there are various invisible files that they use to do that, and they can be anything from just a few K for something like Microsoft Word all the way through to, say, 15 gigabytes if you're working on a Blu-ray disc. So there's a lot of space that can be used up without you even knowing about it, and you'll need that space if you want your programs to work at all.
Exactly. So give us some tips on how we can best track these files on your hard drive and free up some space.
The best and simplest way is simply to make sure you're sticking all your files in places where you know you can find them. There's a lot of benefits to this, not just in terms of organization. If you stick all your applications in the applications folder, then your Mac will actually usually have extra functions as a result due to things like the services menu. So it's worth doing it for that alone. But simply in terms of sticking your files, your movie files in the movies folder, your music files in the music folder, you'll know where they are, and rather than having to look around your whole hard drive. And that'll come in useful for a whole host of features, simply because even within the Finder, you can say get info on a folder, and that'll tell you exactly how much space that folder's taking up, rather than you having to go around all your hard drive looking for all the files that you have.
Yeah, so it not only ensures that when it comes to removing applications you no longer need, you also know where they are without having to ferret around looking for them.
Exactly.
Now, before we begin, you mentioned something really important to me about moving applications and files around as we're talking about, and it's really important to keep this in mind. Many people use a really popular application called File Vault, and you wanted to bring up a really important point here.
Yeah, File Vault encrypts everything that's in your home directory, and that's all it will encrypt. So if you store documents, your music, your photos, anything outside of your home directory, that will not be encrypted. So if you lose your Mac and someone starts playing around with it, or even just if they're another user on the same computer, they'll be able to see those files, and they'll be able to use them and do whatever they want with them. So you should always keep your personal files in your home directory.
Good point. Okay, so we now know more about finding our files, keeping track of them, and what files are clogging up your hard drive. Now let's free up some of that space. And one of the easiest ways is archiving files onto DVDs or external hard drives, right?
That's right. You can obviously put anything up to 4 gig or so on a DVD, and that will free up a lot of space. I mean, certainly if you're on a MacBook, then you'll get that within 2 or 3 DVDs, you've freed up 10% or so of even the latest, most powerful MacBooks. So that's a really great way to archive stuff off, and there's usually no reason why it's on your computer half the time. There's an amazing amount of things that you think you need right now, but you don't actually access that often. So simply burning them off onto DVD so you can use them at a later date when you actually do need them is a great way to save yourself some space.
Yeah. Now, there are two great software tools for archiving files and cleaning your hard disk. Briefly tell us about those.
Burn folders is OS X's built-in way of archiving things, and that's very simple. You just go to the File menu in Finder, create a new burn folder, give it a name, drag what you want to archive onto that burn folder, and then within that folder there's a button marked Burn, and you click that and insert a blank disk, and away you go. And then you can keep burning that DVD as many times as you like to make sure you've got more than one backup before you just delete the files by dragging them to the trash. Omni Disk Sweeper is a bit more intricate because it's basically a good way to find all the files that you want. If you're just burning your iPhoto library to DVD, then obviously you know where that is. But as we mentioned about filing things, if you're actually not sure exactly what's taking up the most space or what the biggest files are, Omni Disk Sweeper is a great way because it will go through your whole hard drive, find invisible files that we talked about that the system uses, as well as files that you may not have suspected of taking up too much space that are in your library, that are used by applications and are used for caches for things like Safari and so on. And you can look through, see which are the biggest files, see which ones that you want to get rid of right now, and then stick them onto a DVD.
Now, it's important to mention here that with Omni Disk Sweeper, Rob, it's really important that when it starts recommending or showing you files that you might want to destroy, be careful here, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there is no going back once you hit that delete button. It will delete, and unless you've been very good with your Time Machine backups, then you're liable to lose that file, and there's no way of getting it back. So if you do delete a file, try dragging it to the trash first, and at least you'll stand a chance if you have a second thought about it.
You know, we've been talking about using Omni Disk Sweeper and burn folders to back up stuff onto DVDs, but let's talk a second about hard drives. I mean, give us an example of what you use at home in terms of your external hard drives to give people an example of what they need.
I have a Time Capsule, which is Apple's built-in hard drive and Airport Extreme base station. So you just need to have that on your network and select it as the destination for your Time Machine backups, and it will back up everything either wirelessly or through wired Ethernet. That's about 500 gigabytes of backup space, and that can store my laptop, my iMac, and my wife's MacBook as well. So that's three computers worth backed up, and there's usually space left over if you want to save some files to it as well, used as a server. But I've also got a Buffalo Link Station, which is just, again, another 500 gigabytes of data, and that's gigabit Ethernet. You leave that on the network, and you can use that for streaming music to iTunes if you want, and it's got a built-in print server as well. So it's very useful, and all you have to do is mount that on your desktop, and you can drag files to it.
But now you have a lot more hard drive backup space than you actually have hard drive capacity for your three machines. What would you recommend on average for someone who wants to back up? Say, get a hard drive that is, say, double the size of their existing drive?
Certainly 2 to 3 times is kind of the rule of thumb when you're wanting to keep backups. Time Machine works well, and it'll do an immediate backup of your whole hard drive the first time you use it, and it'll keep on doing incremental backups. Depending upon what you set your preference is, because if you're working with, say, big movie files and you keep updating them, or if you, say, have Microsoft Entourage, which for a reasonable size database will be 500 megabytes, every time that gets updated, and if you're using Time Machine to back up every hour, then that's 500 megabytes that gets it backed up every hour. Sooner or later, you're going to run out of hard drive space, but 2 to 3 times is plenty for most people, and it should keep going. And Time Machine will keep backups going for as long as it can. It won't just get rid of all of them. It'll just delete the oldest as you keep on filling up more and more space.
Okay, now that's archiving. Let's get into some little things that you can do to add more power. Briefly tell us about those.
Possibly the simplest and the cheapest way of giving your Mac the most power possible is to fill up with as much RAM as you can get. I mean, RAM is very, very cheap. These days you can get 1 gigabyte chips for about £20-30 if you look.
Right, dirt cheap, really.
Absolutely cheap, and modern Macs can go to 4 gigabytes of RAM with no difficulty. Certainly you want to be thinking of having at least 1 gigabyte of RAM with Leopard if you're using Leopard. I'd say a minimum for comfort. I mean, 2 gigabytes if you want to make sure you never have too many visits from the spinning beach ball, but 1 gigabyte is the minimum if you're on Leopard, I would have said.
Mm-hmm. And some of the other things, running fewer apps and also using Energy Saver.
Yeah, Energy Saver particularly useful for older Macs that use PowerPC chips, because you can set the processor to run slower if you're, say, out and about using your Mac or your PowerBook, because that will reduce the power drain on the battery, but it will slow down your Mac. So making sure that the Energy Saver preferences are set to use the best performance settings rather than the best battery settings will certainly speed it up. Running fewer apps, that's simply a question of your processor, the Mac's processor, that lovely Intel chip that sits there inside, that has to actually execute all your program's instructions, and it can only do it so quickly. So if it bottlenecks because you're running 5, 10, 15 applications at the same time, each program has to wait in turn for its chance to run whatever it needs to do. So if you run fewer and fewer applications, then each program will get more and more share of that processor.
All right, so some great techniques and tips to speeding up your Mac, an older Mac, and making it a lot better. And a lot of it, as Rob says, really concentrates on the hard drive itself, so keep that in mind. Great 10-page feature, Speed Up Your Mac, in the June issue. Rob, thanks for joining us and giving us some great tips.
No problem. Thanks, Brian.
Rob Buckley is a contributing writer to Mac Format. His 10-page feature entitled Speed Up Your Mac begins on page 30 in the June issue, which is on sale now. Got a problem? Well, Trevor Middleton is here to solve it, whether it's your Mac, iPod, or iPhone, and he joins us now for questions and answers. Hello, Trevor.
Hello, Brad. You always give me such a good build-up.
I always try. Sometimes you let us down, but most of the time you don't, so don't worry about it. No big deal.
I try not to be anticlimactic.
Exactly. You can send questions to Trevor at machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. We love to get email from our listeners and readers of Mac Format, and don't forget to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. Question number one is from Jonathan Brook from Sully Hall in the West Midlands. He writes, I have a file located in the trash that does not get deleted when I select empty trash. I have tried to get info on this, but when I do, it disappears for 2 seconds, then reappears. I've been reading about lots of terminal stuff that might fix this, but I don't want to cause further problems. Trevor, what should I do?
Okay, well, an undeletable file might be one that's locked, it might be corrupt, it might be in use by another application. So, first step, make sure you've quit all the applications you had open. Try also relaunching the Finder by holding down Command-Alt-Escape, choosing Finder from the dialog box, and pressing the relaunch button. If you still can't empty the trash, then try restarting the Mac. Another possibility is that you're running Windows on your Mac using either Bootcamp or one of the many virtualization solutions such as VMware Fusion, and there's a problematic Windows file showing up in the Mac trash. This is quite a common occurrence, I have to say. I've seen it myself. I've had the same problem myself. So, boot up into Windows, try running CheckDisk under Windows, and see if that resolves the issue for you. Usually, CheckDisk will spot the file, correct the problem, and then when you boot up into macOS 10, you'll find the files disappeared. Brad.
And question two comes to us from Matthew Cornish in West Sussex. He wrote us, my Freecom 400-gigabyte hard drive has begun to corrupt my iMac running Leopard. I partitioned it into a couple of volumes, and at first their icons were missing at startup. I have to unplug the FireWire cable from the hard drive, plug it back in again for the disk to be recognized. Now, this is manageable, but slightly alarming. I tried Disk Utility in Onyx, hoping it would fix the problem, but it didn't. My Mac's now started crashing with the disk plugged in, and now I have to leave it plugged in until I want to retrieve a file. Any ideas on how to fix this problem? Trevor.
Well, Matthew, you probably know that inside the casing of your external FireWire drive is a hard disk exactly like the one inside your Mac. The difference is that inside that external drive, there's an extra piece of circuitry that takes the data output from the connector on the disk and converts it to the standard used by whatever type of connector is on the outside of the disk, be it FireWire, USB, and so on. This bridge card or bridge board is a common source of data corruption, usually when the drive's been in use for a couple of years. So that's a possible problem, possible solution. Where do you go from here? Well, you could go back to the dealer where you bought the drive from and mention the Sale of Goods Act as you're in the UK. Essentially, the onus is on the dealer to offer a repair to the drive, and if that doesn't rectify the issue, you have the right to ask for a replacement. It doesn't matter that the drive is outside the manufacturer's warranty period, because the Sale of Goods Act applies for up to 6 years after you buy the goods. Alternatively, if you don't fancy going the legal route, you could always buy a new external FireWire enclosure from a PC component supplier, then remove the disk from the inside of the drive and fit it into the new case, and with any luck and a following wind, that should resolve the issue. Brad.
And our final question comes from John Rayner of Sheffield, South Yorkshire. He wrote, I have just bought a brand new 20-inch iMac and would like some advice on disk and backups. I was thinking of using my 320-gigabyte hard drive to store all my applications and photos. I was then going to use Time Machine to back everything to an external 500-gigabyte hard drive and store my iTunes library on an 80-gig drive. Is this a sensible solution, or can you advise a better alternative?
Well, first of all, John, welcome to the Mac fold. I remember emailing you maybe a couple of months ago when you were just in the process of deciding which Mac to buy. Anyway, so far, so good. If you're keeping your iTunes library in a separate hard disk, however, you'll need to think about backing that up as well. So maybe you've found a use for that spare external drive. And by the way, if you haven't already, don't forget to go to iTunes Advanced Preferences and make sure you've chosen to keep the iTunes music folder organized and to copy music to the iTunes folder when you add tracks to the library. That way, everything will stay where you need it to be, making it much easier to back up iTunes.
All right, Trevor, thanks so much for answering three great questions this week. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay, see you next time.
You can always send us your questions to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And don't forget to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. And that's it for another edition of Mac Format This Week. My thanks to Shane Higby, Rob Buckley, and Trevor Middleton. Our associate producer is Misha Sakularopoulou. You can always send us your comments and suggestions to macformatthisweek@futurenet.co.uk. Join us for our next edition on Monday, the 1st of June. Until then, I'm Brad Gibson. Thanks for joining us.